We're going to open the Land Development Advisory Committee meeting on January 9th, 2012. Call order and have a roll call vote.
Kit?
Yep.
Malcolm's not here yet. Robin's not here. Bill?
Yep.
Jim's not here. Margaret?
Here.
Harold?
Here.
Gordy?
Here.
Jack?
Here.
Grace?
Here.
I want the record to know that Gordon Longhurst was here first. This is the first.
No, Kit was here first.
Oh, she
no,
was here?
You were here. I walked in the door first.
Oh. Very good. Okay, our next item we have on the agenda is the proposed draft ordinance for deer winter range. And what happened there is Jack did a really good job in the workshop that was put on by the Planning Commission for his part of the deer winter range. And he was asked by the planning folks that. I don't know if it was the commission or the planning department that asked that you draft the ordinance, Jack.
Dave
did. So he did that, and I read it. It looks pretty good. I don't know if everybody has had a chance to look at it. There's a copy here. Did you give each of them a copy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know, Jack, why don't you sort of run through it a little bit? And I think what our action would be is just to agree or recommend that it move forward with as it was written, or if there's some changes that need to be made so that it moves on to the planning office.
Well, after that meeting, Dave came up and he indicated that two things that we were going to need. One would be a proposed ordinance for the commissioners to adopt and to discuss that public hearing when they go to the public hearing stage. And then the second was he was requesting a map. So I talked to the folks from DFW and gave my email address and all the rest and said, you know, send me information on mapping the areas that you would be concerned about still protecting. I haven't heard from them. So Dave sent a copy of the existing ordinance. I did a little surgery on the existing ordinance, and here we are. Okay. So that's where it's coming.
So this reflects what we as a committee had agreed should be passed on as far as the recommendations. So I don't know if you feel if there's something that should have been added or want to make any comments on it. I think eventually what would happen is the map would be included in this document. So
the way they did in the original ordinance is they referenced the map to be created. Right.
Yeah.
So I just played off of that and put the parameters in.
You could tell ODFW that if they don't want to send us a map, we'll do our own. They'll be sending it right back.
No, I just know that they will be present at the public hearing process. They weren't given the opportunity to speak at the last workshop because it really shouldn't have been. I mean, it was looking like it was lining up to be a public hearing when in reality it was an opportunity for our folks to be able to make their presentation so the Planning Commission could understand what the document was about and not to get into a debate, public debate. So Jack did a really good job. So anyway, if there's not any other comment, I'd take a motion to recommend that this move forward to the Planning Commission.
All motion.
Okay. Second. Second. Gray, second. Any more discussion? Not.
I trust Jack.
We'll do that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. The next item on the agenda is a threshold for timber cubic feet per acre per year, resource lands to non-resource lands, Bob Park. And he'd done some work and put together some comments, which I think you all have. So, Bob, why don't you give us a rundown on this document. And I do know Malcolm is not here, but he did provide some comments by email, which we all have a copy of that as well, I believe.
I saw those and
okay.
See what we can do to respond to some of these questions. The basis for this proposed change is the current county code makes a differentiation between primary forest, being forest commercial, woodlot resource and non-resource. And it's based off the IRR system, internal rate of return, that was done by Larry Brown. And that system takes into consideration not only the soils themselves, but the costs of harvest and replanting, as well as what the profit was from sale of the timber. And he came up with a system called the internal rate of return. And basis was that if you could make 4% on your money over and above inflation, then people would invest in that for forestry. If it was below 3.5, they wouldn't do it. And so we said, okay, 3.5 and below for commercial forestry use would be non-resource. 3.5 to 4.0 would be woodlot resource, and anything above 4.0 would be forest commercial. The state of Oregon, in its infinite wisdom, has said to identify forest land from now on, you have to use cubic feet per acre per year. And the calculations that Larry used, they use site index, which is another forestry tool to identify. So current county codes do not identify land by the new state statute. Or it's not a statute, it's an Oregon administrative rule. And it was put together under the guise of housekeeping. There wasn't a state law change, it was a housekeeping item for them to be consistent throughout the state. So they came up with a set of administrative rules that says, we have to use the NRCS mapping to show what is forest productivity capability in cubic feet per acre per year. If that information is not available, then you go to the Department of Revenue maps to see what their proposed capability is. And if that doesn't happen or it's not available, then you go to the U.S. Forest Service Plant Association Guide. If that doesn't work, this is a hierarchy of data that you use. If that doesn't work, there are a number of other Department of Forestry accepted studies that you can use. None of those studies are in Southern Oregon. They're all up from Eugene North. So none of those other Department of Forestry information things are available. What I tried to explain in this memo here is that even if you identify forest land by cubic feet per acre per year, there is no state definition of what constitutes forest land for commercial purposes. And which is similar to the Curry County case about urban and rural residential development. The judge said clearly 10,000 square foot lots is urban. Clearly 10 acres and larger is rural. But everything in between 10,000 square feet and 10 acres, it's not defined. So you get to make your case on a case-by-case basis. The LCDC did not attack that directly. What they said is for all new lots within the rural areas, you cannot make lots smaller than 2 acres, period. But it still didn't address where is the dividing line between rural and urban. So that same kind of a thing is now transferred onto the forestry. You have a tool that you have to identify land capability with, which is the cubic feet per acre, but it doesn't say where the break point is. Is it 100 cubic feet per acre, 50 cubic feet per acre, 20 cubic feet per acre, 5 cubic feet per acre? Nowhere does it say in the state rules where that break point is. So now with the change in state law, our use of the 3.5 and 4.0 as a breakpoint between forest land and not forest land really doesn't make any difference anymore because we can't use it. We have to use the cubic feet per acre per year. And the reason I felt that it's really important to deal with this is out of the 74 soils in the soil survey, 22 of those soils do not have a cubic feet per acre rating in the NRCS system. It's just not there. And that's kind of equivalent to our IRR soils, is there's a number of soils that don't have an IRR. So what the code said is if you don't have an IRR, you have to use expert testimony to show if it's forest land or not. You have to hire a forester. So what I did was to look at where is that breakpoint between forest land and non-forest land for commercial purposes.
Bob, can I ask you a question? Why couldn't you use the Department of Revenue's?
Why don't I use the Department
of Revenue? Could you use that as the...
You can use the Department of Revenue. Here's the Department of Revenue map for Township 34, Range 5. And their system is an evaluation by 40-acre blocks. It does not go by soil type. It goes by 40-acre blocks, and so if you own land within that block, you kind of figure out what it is, and you have a letter, which is an FG or an FF, and then that is an equivalent to a cubic foot per acre per year. So an F, and it's one of those things that isn't a direct conversion, like an FG, which is a Douglas fir site class of 5, a V, to use Roman letters. So an FG is a type 5 site index, and it is in a range of 50 to 84 cubic feet per acre per year. So you've got 35 cubic feet per acre within this range on the FGs. Talk to Jackson County and look at their codes. I talked to Douglas County to find out about their code, and they set 50 cubic feet per acre as their dividing line between forest and non-forest for commercial purposes. So, since we can't use the IRR, what system do we use to define it? Based on the other two counties, and then I looked at LUBA decisions, and LUBA decisions are very similar to what the court case was on Curry County. They said clearly 85 cubic feet is timberland, and 20 cubic feet definitely, almost all cases, would be considered non-timberland, so anything between 20 and about 80, you get to make a case-by-case determination. So that's a big spread between 20 and 80. When I talk to foresters and they look at the curved indexes, they usually, for Douglas fir, they usually say, if we're going to invest in forest land, they don't look at anything below 50. Now, some people have said, well, 20 is the magic number. And the reason 20 comes up is in the Department of Forestry regulations, is if you harvest timber and send it to a mill, you have to restock if it's 20 cubic feet per acre or greater. It doesn't say it's good timberland or if it's going to be manageable or anything else. It just says you have to replant if you show 20 cubic feet per acre or larger. Well, I was working with Jim Frick, and we talked to the folks out at Rough and Ready and said, what do you manage for? And they go, manage or buy? Are we going to acquire timberland for timber purposes, or is it stuff that we already have because they said, we don't use this cubic feet per acre, we go by board feet. And by board feet, they said, well, if we already have it in our ownership, we'll keep it if it's above 20 or 240 board feet per acre per year, which is about 20. They said, if it's below 20, we won't keep it, but we won't buy it either. If a piece of property comes up for sale, are we going to acquire it, figuring we're going to put it in our inventory for timber management? They say, no, we're not going to buy anything down that low anymore. Just if we've already got it, we'll just keep it because there's no market to sell the property anyway.
What's the method of determining cubic feet per
year?
Is it you walk the land and estimate it?
Well, it's not. Some of it's estimate, but it's based primarily on direct measurement. Because to figure out the cubic feet per acre per year capability, you go out onto a piece of property and find the stand of trees, and you find the woods at the edge, which usually will grow the best. They're called the dominant and codominant tree. Because if you're in the middle of the clump, they're going to be shaded and they're not going to go quite as well. If they're isolated out in the middle of nowhere, you know, just a single tree here or there, then you're going to have heat and different things, so it's not going to do well. So you try and pick the dominant and codominant trees at the edge of a cluster. Because if you read that bulletin from the Department of Forestry, it says, try and find a clump of 25 trees, and you go out there and bore the tree and pull it out, and you count the growth rings, you measure the diameter of the tree, and then you check the height. So based on the age of the tree, the diameter, and the height, they will figure out how many cubic feet per acre that tree will provide, and then if you evenly distributed throughout the acre, then you'll have how much cubic feet per acre per year it is.
Now, are you done with what it is?
I think
it just struck me that, you know, Jefferson County several years ago, because we own 32,000 acres of forest land, timberland,
mm-hmm.
We hired a firm, I don't know where they came from, but they to find out just what our inventory was,
mm-hmm.
for the all of the 33,000 acres, and they did a report to the county. I wonder what they used to come up with the determination as far as growth and all of that, because they used some kind of a formula and some kind of a system,
mm-hmm.
to provide that, and that 33,000 acres is all over this county. It's not,
yeah.
all in one block. Could that be something you ought to look at to see if that is
a... Find that report and see what it
does. Harris would be the one that could have that, but
yeah.
We've been using, the county's been using that, and it gave us a real accurate reporting of exactly how much timber we had and the growth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
So it seems to me that was done by a professional.
It'd be very interesting.
It would. And I say, I didn't think of that until while you're talking. I thought,
okay.
Well, maybe they have a system that
we could utilize. I'll talk to Virgil.
That's acceptable by the industry.
See what we get.
Vic. Virgil's gone.
Virgil's
gone.
Boy, I'm living in the past.
Yeah.
I have a question. Just because on our own property, from my experience, there's areas of the property where the trees grow really well, and there's other areas where it's drier, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the east side versus the west side. So when they're figuring cubic feet per acre, they're going to do more than a big tree and a small tree in one clump. They're going to have to do in the arid area. I mean, west-facing and east-facing.
And they do averages to figure out, you know, the entire
property.
In
several different places.
Yeah.
And then it's not just two trees.
No,
it's
several
hundred acres.
No. It's a lot more than that.
Okay. I mean, that seems pretty simplistic.
Yeah. So.
Except in that one, it's in 40-acre blocks.
Yeah, except this one, it's in 40-acre blocks. Now, one of the things that in the bulletin from the Department of Forestry, it says, yes, you've got to use the NRCS as the primary source. And if that doesn't work, you can go to the Department of Revenue app, and if that doesn't work, you come down to the Department of Agriculture U.S. Forest Service mapping. And that's plant associations. And the local forest down here, it does not give cubic feet per acre or site index. Plant associations, what they do is they describe percent of cover based on the location in the forest. So, you know, it may say that the dead firs are, you know, 54% of the cover, and the ceanothus is, and brush is 20% of the cover, and so it just gives, here's the kind of plants that grow together, but it doesn't give a an actual listing. Now, the one thing it does say in that bulletin is, even though you may have all these other sources, if you think they are wrong, you can hire a forester to go out and do direct measurements. And the forester has to be a member of the Society of American Foresters. It's got to have credentials, so it's not just somebody that fill out the permit card. You can't just grab somebody and say, here, come tell me. So you've got to have a credentialed individual. Problems that I see from a practical standpoint from the property owner is they really don't know unless they have some kind of background in forestry. Now, the one that I had done recently, there was not an NRCS reading on the property, so we didn't have that to work from. All we had to work from was the Department of Revenue, and it said that it was in the range 50 to 84. So with that, I'd say 84 site. But I went out and looked at it, and those trees were ugly and scraggly, and they didn't look very good to me, so we hired a forester, and he went out and checked, and by the time they got done with the trees and measured them, the average on property was 18 cubic feet per acre. So if you just take the manual, put it on the desk and say, is this? So that if got any other verification, you'd say it's forest land. And that's where the system is supposed to be able to work. So if somebody finds that there's a problem, that he can come in and show through information studies by expert testimony that it is not decent forest land, then we can change it and get it out of the forest protection and let him change the zone to a limited development or serpentine or 5-acre rural residential, and then you can go in and develop the property. But without the IRR system of below 3.5, we have to select something or you're not going to have a consistency of where does the county think that the real break line is between forest commercial property for commercial purposes and non-resource. So my proposal is to check the 50 cubic feet per acre as the break point between non-resource and resource. Now, one of the things about Malcolm's letter says, well, what about all those other things? Well, those are other things, and you have to take those into consideration, and that is another part of the zone change application procedure, where you talk about wildlife and all those other things. But it's not that break between the commercial and non-commercial.
I have one other question. If the property has been logged, say, 20 years ago, it may only have 18, you know, cubic feet per acre at this point, but it has the potential when those trees get bigger.
You look at the stumps, don't they? Or the forester would.
Yeah. Well, just because it doesn't have the trees now doesn't mean that it shouldn't have the trees if they've been cut.
But beyond that, it also assumes that under management, even age stand managed property, it would achieve that growth rate, and that's a big if. I mean, the only people that manage forest lands in that manner are industrial foresters, Perpetua for rough and ready or somebody like that. somebody that owns their own 40-acre woodlot. In fact, they're encouraged for all other reasons to have mixed age, mixed stand for wildlife, for health of the forest and everything else. So you're talking about two different types of forest. I mean, and unless you have a big enough piece of property to manage it as industrial forestry, it's not practical. And then there's the issue of topography and access and everything else that all got nothing to do with cubic footage. So the whole cubic foot per acre per year is such a limited way to actually define what would be successfully managed as industrial forest land. It's like a big blunt object that you're trying to
suppress. Then
I think that's the whole problem with the resource land, with farm and forest, is geared for Willamette Valley commercial farming and industrial forestry, right? But I have a classic case here. I have a client who wants to do a zone change.
You have a client? Oh,
hey, good for you. I may not after this because it's a self-peculiar. Now, I was told before I start that the FG rating, is that right? That was 0 to 49 cubic feet.
Nope.
Okay, but let's assume that it is because I need your chart there.
Okay.
Yeah, but so I was told on the assessor's office that this rating on this property with the Department of Revenue stuff was 0 to 49 cubic feet per year, per acre per year. The IRS system, 90% of this property is below, it is rated by the IRS system below 3.5.
Okay.
It does have an NRCS cubic feet per year rating, all over 100 cubic feet per year.
Mm-hmm.
So then I look at the assessor's map, and that, in my what I understood, was 0 to 49
okay.
cubic feet per year. So this particular owner is reluctant to hire a forester, and I'm saying you really have to. You're going to spend tens of thousands of dollars trying to get a zone change and not get anywhere. You know, but anyway, here's this classic dilemma. So is NRCS inaccurate as far as the soil type, or is it inaccurate for the soil forest production in this particular locale? Can you make that case, or do you have to buy into whatever NRCS says it is, regardless of where it is or how it is?
Do they provide a disclaimer at all as far as their analysis? Or their
I have to look online now because...
it's not in the manual anymore.
It's in the manual.
Really?
Now, according to the guide in the OARs, is if you have an NRCS reading, you have to use it. Unless
it's incorrect.
And then the only way to disprove it is to do a direct measurement, hire the forester.
Right. That's what I thought about.
Yeah,
but
if he won't hire the forester.
These data are conflicts. Even if it were 50 to 84 or 85 cubic feet
mm-hmm.
per acre per year, it's still a huge difference between 115 or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And the first, I haven't been on the property, but the surveyor said it's mixed, old madrone, you know, there's some probably spots of good timber, but he's not a forester, so
Forester is the one that figures out what it is and will look at those different clumps and say, you know, based on even age, you know, if I project this out for the entire property, here's what my reading would be, and if it's above 50, then I'd say it's commercial forest land.
Yeah.
Okay.
The break point that, you know, that a lot of people use is that 20, or some people try and use, when you talk to Mike Walker and people that are in government, they go 20 cubic feet. Now, when you really break that down, what is producing 20 cubic feet per acre per year? That's less than half a cord of firewood. And to me, if you can't produce half a cord of firewood per acre, I'm not going to invest in that to try and make money on it. Now, and that's what the decision that we're talking about is, where is the break between commercial timber and not commercial timber land? You still have those other cases that you have to make, whether it is needed for buffers or habitat or those other issues, you still have to deal with that. But the primary question that we should have a new tool in the toolbox is, what is the breakpoint on cubic feet per acre?
Hey, Bill.
I'm catching up with you guys here. What is the economic impact for our town? This confusing system. How does it affect the timber industry?
Well, the timber and the lands, and that's what we're looking about, what is the proper zoning to put on these lands, is if it is considered timberland, the state came out with its one-size-fits-all system saying that if you have timberland, you cannot create lots smaller than 80 acres. So if you have 150 acres of this.
So we're talking about somebody wants to put a couple dwellings.
Put a couple dwellings on it? The answer is no.
No.
One dwelling sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes one dwelling, especially when you start dealing with the O&C, those checkerboard patterns. You can have a 160 acre piece that you can't build on.
Did Rough and Ready give, or anybody else give you any idea about? Okay, so you have some land that produces 100 cubic feet per acre per year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how much land is worth it for them, a 5-acre piece to buy, even if it isn't highly productive timberland? Do they need 40 acres, 80 acres to make it worthwhile?
And it's like anything else, what's the real estate term? Location, location, mm-hmm. location.
How easy is it to harvest it, huh?
How easy is it to get to harvest it?
Well,
what is it in relation to other lots similar in size and use? So if it's a 5-acre piece where there's a bunch of houses around it, it can be 100 cubic feet and you're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're at 30 cubic feet, but you own the other ones and you're just going to harvest it on a casual basis, you know, once every 130 years, and you can get it for $50 an acre, you take it.
Uh-huh.
So part of it is, what is it in relation to those other things? And that's just the same thing as farmland. It could be class 6 farmland, but if it is necessary for the overall pattern of farming to keep occurring, it's still farmland, even though it's got bad soils for farm purposes.
Let's do this. I think Bob has done all of his information, and what we need to look at are the pages on page 4 and 5, I believe, of his document that he provides some opportunities for making some changes. 4 and 5
right.
are recommended changes on that document. You should have, it has the cover page from Anne. As this, it looks like this.
I've had 2 pieces.
This one is this one. A fairly thick one.
No, I didn't get it.
Is there a copy machine working?
It is.
We would have just gotten it. It would have been on the table. But he has about 5 changes, it looks like. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 recommended changes to the document.
Let me see that other one I handed to you.
So you want, if you have them, you want to look at mine?
Yeah.
I have.
The deer went away one?
No, not that one.
This one?
Yeah.
That one.
Well, I had other things on there that shouldn't have been on there.
Oh.
I know. So I'm just going to put a little line through all of those. And it's the same one on
there.
Pretty
much covered the changes he went through. Pretty much covered a lot of what he was actually presented. So
I won't brag on
Jack.
I just noticed that. What the heck are those doing?
The new AR's demand reference to this national
NRCS. NRCS.
National
the problem is, if NRCS doesn't address the parcel, then we're left with no formula for what we're going to do.
No, there's some specific language that says, okay, if this isn't...
Oh, no, it's his proposal. I'm talking about the problem.
Existing one, yeah. The
existing
current
problem is, if it's not covered in our CS, we're out to lunch, and we're all kind of sitting there wondering, what do we do? And what he has proposed for us is a set sequence of evaluation.
Why don't you give me that?
Oh, that's in the OIR, that sequence.
Yeah, that
seems
already
rated.
It is this.
I haven't read it yet, so I'm not sure. But see, suppose it's not rated, which is another question. Then you go to the assessor's data, the Department of Revenue, which is basically worthless. And another contradiction could arise where the assessor's data says it produces 0 to 49 acres or cubic feet per acre per year, and in reality it produces 150, you know. But the assessor's office got it wrong, but then that property owner can go ahead and change this absolutely wonderful forest property into residential. So that could happen. And then if you still can't, aren't satisfied, or you don't think it's accurate, then you get your forfeiture.
Okay, well, that wasn't the way I read.
Yeah, it's all laid out in the OAR, but it's in the bond too. The same process. All right.
Well, that on his page 4, under his conclusion, he said that's. So the state did not establish a standard or kind of threshold for commercial forest land. The IR system will likely be challenged by a few of connections to the NRCS. Is not made. There's established precedent to use 50 cubic feet as a standard for both Jackson and Douglas County.
Okay.
Did you address some of the concerns that Malcolm had put in his? He'd ask some questions or want some clarification on some things.
Okay. There is no direct conversion on NRCS, so you just have to look them up, and that would be something that that the county needs to do, is look up each soil type and write down what they are, because he mentioned the Beekman. Yes, so he said site index of 115, if you divide it by the 60 years, it comes out with 106 cubic feet. I looked up on the NRCS, and their rating is 100. So it's not a direct divided by 60. So each one is going to be looked up to find out exactly what it says for each of the soil types. In his concern was, well, what about all those other things? These forest lands maintain soil, air, water, fish, and wildlife resources. Well, that's true, but that's part of the other factors that come to bear on zone change. What we're just doing is saying, what is the where is the break point between commercial timber productivity and not commercial timber productivity? You still have to deal with these other things, because if it's, say, it is 15 cubic feet per acre, if it's in critical deer habitat, we have said that has a 32 dwellings per square mile, you've still got to meet that standard.
But to go back to Jack, when you were, Jack, the packet that I have, there's an OAR, and in that it says, where NRCS data are not available or shown to be inaccurate, other site productivity data may be used to identify forest land in the following order of priority.
Right.
A, Oregon Department of Revenue, Western Oregon Site Class Maps.
Right.
B, USDA Forest Service Plant Association Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Or C, other information determined by the state forester to be of comparable quality. And three, where data of comparable quality under subsection 2A-2C are not available or are shown to be inaccurate, an alternative method for determining productivity may be used as described in the Oregon Department of Forestry's technical bulletin entitled Land Use Planning Notes.
Okay.
Right. So that, so...
Which was that first line again, I think...
We're in RCS.
A is probably A.
A is the first priority. You have to go first to Oregon Department of Revenue.
But read it. That's
after NRCS.
Yeah.
No, I want to
okay, it says here, when NRCS, where NRCS data are not available or shown to be inaccurate.
Okay, there. You don't have to go any further. On this, you just got not available because it can be shown to be inaccurate. And if this were to be implemented, it's simply not available. Like in my client's case, there are data available,
mm-hmm.
but we're not sure if they're accurate or not. So we need to make sure that language is inaccurate.
Where was that? Where is that?
On Bob, page 4-6, he's got underlined.
Okay, that's if such information is not available.
Or shown to be incorrect.
Okay,
or
so there needs to be a, that needs to be a...
Yeah.
Or inaccurate.
Or inaccurate, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
shown to be inaccurate.
What's the actual language?
Shown to be inaccurate.
Shown on the.
It could also be on the next page because.
The question I have, Bob, is because back when we did the IRR, all of these folks, I don't know about the Department of Revenue, but the Forest Service, the Department of Forestry, all signed off as their agency that said this was a system that was acceptable to them
mm-hmm.
for use in this. Is that no good now? Because even those folks had made that determination.
Because of the new OAR, we have to use cubic feet per acre to identify
okay.
forests.
Yeah. Okay.
It provides no... alternative.
Okay.
I recall when reading the material that you sent out, and I didn't know it was good, but I was out all day and I just came here from somewhere else, and so I didn't get into it. But yeah, I believe that it was in the OAR, and I thought it was on page 2 of the OAR, but it was the largest PDF I was sent out. And it's something about an acceptable alternative being in Lane County, some system that Lane County has. And I was wondering if what's so special about Lane County? If they have a system that is acceptable, why couldn't Josephine County's IRR system?
Oh. Okay, that's a study that's approved by the Department of Forestry, and that study for Lane County takes their soils and assigns a cubic feet per acre. We don't have the same soils as Lane County.
But we have the same methodology.
But they have their own methodology for doing that, and we have our own methodology for doing that. Why can't our methodology be recognized as criteria? If there's a special system.
If nobody's done it, though, whether they've used the methodology or not, if nobody's actually applied the method.
No. It's not a methodology. It is a data set. It says the Lane County method, and what it does is it takes a different study that they went out and said, this soil, which is not anything that we have here, comes in at 82 cubic feet per acre, or the NRCS may say that it's 95, and they said, well, here in Lane County, we checked it, it's really only 82, so they will accept that Lane County data set.
I see. I was thinking that, I didn't realize that that was a direct conversion to cubic feet per acre per year, because
yes.
I was figuring, well, if they can have their data set, why can't we use our IRR as our data set? Because, I understand that.
Yeah.
Jack?
I'm kind of prejudiced in my objectives, but it seems to me that what Bob has pointed out is a void in the state scheme where we have the option to step in and create a standard that is conducive and helpful to development, because if we drop this 50 cubic feet per acre thing in place, those parcels that don't measure up can get converted into 5-acre residential, rural residential. Okay? All we're doing is we're taking the state code, seizing upon a little opening in there, and establishing an area where, lo and behold, we can go develop some land.
And I'm for it.
Does that take into consideration where this land is? I mean, if it's surrounded by other big tracts and there's no development in that area and yet it has poor trees, does that mean you go in an area where there's whole sections of trees and you have one, you know, 160 acre parcel and you want to divide it into 5 acre parcels because it doesn't have good trees? Maybe that's a little serpentine section in all this huge area of, you know,
640 acres. No. And that's because of the criteria for zone changes. And the criteria
has to be in like areas. So it would have to border other areas that are already
developed.
You have
to show compatibility of the area. You have to look at such things.
I just wanted to make sure that you know what you're proposing wouldn't end up having little pockets of small residential areas and big, huge...
No, it has to be consistent with the surrounding
property.
You're not going to see the neighbor anyway.
Spot zoning is just
Gordon has.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm a little thick here because I still don't... Going back to what Margaret was asking about, as I understand it, Lane County went and took the NRCS... cubic foot rating, and they went out and looked at it themselves and said, well, we disagree, and they came up with their own data set saying that looking at it here, we don't agree with their number, and that was apparently deemed to be legitimate. The SCS, Malcolm's point, I don't understand why it doesn't do the same thing. Yes, it takes some math, and like you said, you come out with 100 on the Beekman 6F, you come out with 100 instead of 106, but they came up in Lane County with 85 instead of 94, so apparently they don't accept the fact. And we've already done the research. We have the ratings for these soils. We just don't have them in exactly the format they want. So why doesn't doing the math work? Is it because we don't have all the soils done that way? Or because you just don't think they'll accept actually just doing long division as being the way to get your answer?
We
still have to establish the threshold.
Right.
We still have to say, well, we're going to choose 20, 40, 60, whatever, mm-hmm. as what we define as commercial timberland. Mm-hmm. But at least we would be starting at a point where the research has already been done.
Yeah. So what we would have to do would be to go to the Department of Forestry and say, here is Josephine County's IRR system. Do you approve and agree to that is an alternative system that is adequate and acceptable.
Which they did in the past.
They already have.
They have in the past, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't show up in their land use planning guide, and because it doesn't show up in there, we can't do it. So, yes.
But Lane County got approved.
But Lane County got approved. So how can we get ours in?
We would have to have the county make a request of Department of Forestry to accept it.
Can't we do that? I mean, could we recommend that as this committee here, that the county do that?
Because yes, it will, and that's half of the battle. It will, remember when I started this, I said out of like 74 soils, 22 have no right rating, and so 22 out of the 74 soils will not work in the IRR system, period. We still have to have a threshold of those ones that don't go into our system.
Why is that, Bob? Why do we have 22 that don't have a rating? Because they were just obviously not timber producing? Or why were they not put in the original IRR?
Because the SCS maps said they're not rated for forestry use. And so we didn't calculate them because SES didn't have them labeled as for timber use. It just says it's not rated for forestry use. And then Steve Dew filed an appeal because we said it's not rated for forestry. And Luba said was, you don't know that. It just says it wasn't rated for forestry. You don't know if it is or it isn't. Just that data set didn't include it. So you would have to have a whole new set of analysis done on all those different
for those soil types except the NCS, NRCS rating. Because unless there's a huge disagreement of opinion, I would think that the NRCS is going to show less than a 20 on them.
Well, I found a number of them don't show up in the NRCS rating either.
Gordy, they said in the SCS book, in the county book, it says, in Table 10, it shows the site indexes, blah, blah, blah. Only those soil types that produce commercial timber are listed. So therefore, one would assume that those that are not listed are not commercial. So Larry Brown only did the ones that said only these soils produce commercial timber, right? Well, that's where Steve Dubing and Luba, who never did like the IR system, decided he was right and just assumed because it's not listed doesn't mean it's not commercial. But to me, that statement is very clear. Only those soils that produce commercial timber are listed in Table 10. To me, that's really clear.
Well, what was the consequence of Steve Dew's appeal?
If it's not, doesn't have an IR rating, then they've got to hire Forrester.
Now, you've got to do that other experts come up with another hoop, evaluation.
So there's nowhere in their system that says that they actually had done the analysis and found that it wasn't.
Right. It's never.
There's no documentation anywhere.
No documentation.
In NRCS.
In the NRCS, nor in the SCS. Either one.
SCS. It would have been in the SCS before NRCS. Because the SCS is the original document.
Right. And it says that we're only reading those ones that we know to be commercial forest land. Anything that they didn't know. They just disregarded or didn't say anything.
And they didn't say that we know to be, because then that implies maybe there's some that they didn't know. They only said we are only rating commercial forestry soils. No.
And that's what Larry was trying to make point of, is that
right.
we're trying to define the commercial forest lands in Josephine mm-hmm. County, and that's what that was. So anything that was outside of that, of course, became... Mm-hmm. open season for development.
Now you have to use the test of other expert testimony, combination of proofs.
Well, it seems to me it wouldn't hurt to ask that the commissioners make a request.
That Department of Forestry mm-hmm. recognize
the IR system.
And add it to their list.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's got to be somewhere in our archives, that unless they destroy the damn stuff, a letter from those folks accepting the IRR. It's either in our system or it's got to be in DLCD system. Because they would not have allowed us to move forward without a document.
Produce that when you, when the commissioners, we already show them a letter saying that they already have approved it, then that would probably be very
didn't
helpful.
Didn't they produce that for when Steve Dube took that up to Luba?
No.
They didn't. Because I remember Michael talking about it. That letter, and it seems like I've seen it.
Georgette may still have a copy of it, and go to her and see if she has.
I talked to Bob Sorge, and Bob Sorge doesn't have any of that. So
Georgette's got to have it and have it shipped thrown away
somewhere. And when I talk,
I'll make it a point to go and talk to her about that, because I don't know whether she's cleaned out his office yet or not. She
talked to Blanche Cates, who rents downstairs. She says there's stuff up there that Georgette probably doesn't have any idea what is up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
If we adopt this idea, how many additional dwelling sites would it add in our county?
Well, if we change the 80 acre to 5, then we're in, 16 dwellings per parcel?
Per parcel.
Now, other factors will come in. Like transportation systems. I'm doing one out in the Illinois Valley now that's 144 acres. But what they said is if we do a straight 5-acre zoning, it would require a left-hand turn lane in 199, which is a maximum of 28 lots. And they said, okay, you could either do 28 lots or up to 28 lots and build the left-hand turn lane, or you can build 8 lots and not build the left-hand turn lane.
Well, in reality, to create a lot, you have to have county road frontage. an awful lot of land that, first of all, doesn't even have county road frontage, but even if you have enough to develop it beyond a couple of lots, then you're going to have to put in a county road. And there's not that, believe me, I can think, at least in the near future, there aren't too many people that are going to spend a couple of $100,000 putting a county road in to create 10 or 15 lots. Pardon me?
Can you do a BPD with a private road?
Well, this is, this goes back to our road discussion. Here, it's a little bit less expensive, but it's still,
expensive.
Yeah, still expensive. And, there are going to be a few instances where you got a piece of land and change its zoning qualifications and then all the other things that would mean that you'd actually put in 16 lots, but there wouldn't be very many. What you're really going to see is somebody being able to split a lot and sell off a 5-acre piece or a 10-acre piece or something, or build on one of the pieces that they can't build on now because they just don't qualify. I can't see it making a huge land rush in those things.
No. Well, let's get back to the discussion here on whether we want to accept the recommendations and move that forward. As they are presented on page 4 and 5 with the amended version to include or shown inaccurate language.
Can we talk about this before we make the motion?
Yeah,
sure. We're not going to go back through the whole thing. Just for now. I'm sorry, Malcolm. But we did address
this is 2 minutes after.
Well, yeah, I almost canceled the meeting.
But
we did address
your concerns.
We did cover some of it.
And you'll be happy there. You'll be a real fast.
Anyway, what did you have?
I would like Bob to go through each one. I see it's not very long.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of confusing here.
You mean each one of the recommendations?
Yeah.
Four and five.
Just the underlying part.
Okay.
For example, we already did the first sentence. That's fine.
On page 4, so we move over to page 5?
5, yeah. I'm happy with that as long as we've got that 4 shown to be inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, in accordance. There, the part that it says will be used. Okay, a comparative rating and evaluation system will be utilized to identify prime forest lands and other so they may be placed in an appropriate zone to conserve. This rating system will be used for all forest land allocations and what shall be known as a composite internal rate of return. Okay. So I don't understand.
That's existing language.
Yes. So I thought you're going to retain this language and then add. So basically, it seems to me there is not data available to calculate an internal rate of return. I thought that was the difficult part, was calculating a new internal rate of return for each soil.
We're not going to be doing that.
It just sounds like that's what you're
saying. The way I see that today, we've got the IRR system, and we don't use cubic feet per acre per year at all. We just use IRR, 3.99 to 3.50, 3.49 or less to make the breaks between forest commercial, woodlot, and non-resource. Mm-hmm. When you make an application under today's rules, you have to do the NRCS.
Mm-hmm. Right.
CS. And if you go to their thing and it shows 85, mm-hmm. but you still have an IRR, you can use the IRR. You just note that it says in the NRCS that it's got 85 cubic feet. Who cares? Because there is no state standard that says 85 is commercial forest land.
Okay. So basically you're saying
if we have an IRR rating, you have to put this in your report, but we use this to determine if it's commercial forest land or not. If we do not have an IRR, then you use the NRCS, and where's the break point?
Okay, well, I understand
50
that.
50 and 49.
Right.
And uh-huh. to get to the 50 and 49, you have the NRCS first. If that doesn't work, then you go to the Department of Revenue. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, you go to the Forest Service. If that doesn't work, per the guide, you can use Lane County, which doesn't apply here because we don't have those soils, or you can go down to direct measurement.
Okay, but why then, if that's clear, why then is the planning office telling me the IRR system is virtually defunct because of the new rating, the new rule?
Because they don't know how to put these two things together and say, you know, what happens if I have an NRCS rating? Who cares if you have an NRCS rating, if you have an IRR system, but somebody has it in their head, if you have an NRCS rating here, then you have to use it. Well, yes, you have to put it in the report, but you build the case, is it forest land or non-forest land, based on the IRR, and if there is no IRR, then you come over and say, okay, we've got an NRCS rating of 85 mm-hmm. Cubic foot per acre per year, mm-hmm. and then you say, is that accurate? If it's accurate, it's above 50, you got forest land no matter what. Mm-hmm. You're done. If it is down at 49, if we define the threshold at 49, then it's not commercial forest land for timber production purposes.
Except that the OIR says, the 060061 and 010.
Yeah?
I remember one. I don't remember. It's 010 and 015. To determine whether it is forest land, you have to use the NRCS data. In other words,
to identify if it's
forest land. So therefore, if you are saying it is not forest land, the implication is that you have to use the NRCS.
Okay.
Regardless of whether you have an IRR system or not.
Okay, you've got farm over here. You've got class 1, you've got class 2, 3, and 4, and 5, 6, and that's all from the soils handbook.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use that, but the state has made the dividing line already saying you're using the system to identify the soils and its capability, and there is the break between class 4 and
right.
class 5
mm-hmm.
for commercial timberland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, over here, you've got 1 through 180, whatever it is, you're using the NRCS to show what the cubic feet per acre per year is,
mm-hmm.
but there is no standard to say where is the break between commercial or not. That's the proposal here, is to say, in Josephine County, we're going to use the NRCS if that data is available, and depending on the number, we're going to say if it's commercial or not.
Okay, that's the part. Now I understand your 50. You know that there is no standard, and that 50 should be the standard. I understand that perfectly well. It is. Are you saying here? And if you are, it needs to be clear that the county will continue to use the IRR system.
Mm-hmm.
However, if it does not have over 50% rated and the composite below 3.5 or something other in the case of a zone change,
mm-hmm.
then the next step will be to use, you know, OIR 660, 06, blah, 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 you know, and the NRCS over 50 cubic feet per year or the Department of Revenue or whatever it takes. But see, my understanding was that the new regulations pretty much made the IRR system defunct, and the county has no choice. This is the message I'm getting from the planning office.
Okay.
Let me ask you one quick question. I've only got the SCS book. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any soil in there that's rated for 3 feet
also is rated for IRR, I believe.
No.
No? I thought IRR was all the soils that are rated as forestry soils are rated to IRR.
Oh, yeah, in a separate document, right?
Yeah. So if you're not rated for IRR, you can just forget about the NRCS, can't you?
No, if you're not, it's the other way around. Although the problem is that everything that Larry Brown rated in the IRR system has a 2 feet per year of site index from everything else he used.
Right.
Everything, the 20 soils that he did not rate, none of them have a 2 feet per acre per year.
And you don't have IRR. So what I'm saying is if you don't have an IRR rating, skip the NRCS.
You
missed that pretty good here, Malcolm.
Yeah.
That would be the logical conclusion, but apparently Steve Duke filed an appeal on that, and the Luba ruling was that just because there isn't a rating doesn't mean you can't assume that it is not a forestry. Oh, no, I know that. What I'm saying is, though, Gordy, if you don't have an IRR rating, you're not going to find this information under the soils and the SCS.
Exactly.
Some of the things that do not have an SCS number and therefore not an IRR, they do have an NRCS number. I've seen a couple of them.
In the timber?
In the timber.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Great. Seems pretty rare.
It is rare, but it's there.
Okay.
So the way I see that we have to do it is in your report, if you're, you know, trying to make a zone change, saying, you know, it's not timberland, you have to put in the NRCS number.
Right.
It has to be in the report. No matter what it is, whether it's 85, 22.
If it's there at all.
If it's there at all, it has to be in the report. Just because it's in the report doesn't mean we can't use the IRR system. And that's where I think you're absolutely right, and you're absolutely right that we need to make a request of the Department of Forestry to add it to their land use planning guide. NRCS, Department of Revenue, Forest Service, Lane County, Josephine County IRR system. If we can get them to add that in, that would clarify it.
Yeah. But according to David Wexner, when I laid out my client situation, he said that I said 90% rated IRR, all under 3.5. Does he need a forester? And David said yes. And this is what DLCD sent him in the case of Woodlot Resource and a zone change, that he has to have a forester expert testimony.
Well,
and use the NRCS and only use the forester to show that the NRCS is possibly inaccurate.
Okay, now the question that I have, in your case, it would be difficult. And I would advise the client you'd have to hire a forester because you said the NRCS rating is 100.
Over
100. If it is over 100, I would be hard-pressed to go in and make the case of, okay, the NRCS says it's over 100, the IRR says it's 3.43, mm-hmm. And it says in a priority, you've got to use the NRCS. If we don't have this threshold here, then we say, that's forest land. Doesn't make any difference. If you say, okay, it's below 50, you're okay. But what we have is these 57s. Because we don't have a state standard, if you have a 57 in the NRCS and you show over here in the IRR, a 3.46. For the Luba case, it says those areas between 20 and 80, you have to deal with those because there is no state standard. You have to deal with those on a case-by-case basis to show is it forest land or not. Mm-hmm. And we can say by the IRR that has enough background and acceptance, it's below 3.5. Even though it may have a 57 IRR, we can show that it's not forest land. And so that's how you make the case.
According to David, that it won't work. Okay. I could say, look, 90% is rated below the thing, but the NRCS just makes the statement. So if we're going to change it, it needs to be very, very clear.
Crystal clear.
extremely clear.
Okay, Peggy and then Jack.
Peggy.
Yeah, that's Peggy.
So if the OIR says that you have to use NRTF first, then Department of Revenue, then, you know, whatever, and then Lane County, and even if we get our IRR in there, won't it be at the bottom of the list? And won't they say, and if we say that our standard for NRCS is 50 and above for commercial and 49 and below is not, then won't they say that has to take precedence over our IRR system?
Yeah, and that's where you have to show that it is inaccurate, where it is shown to be inaccurate, and that's where it's, you know, going to happen. We're not going to have a default nice system to say, okay, ours is a 3.49, and it's good to go. If we've got some high NRCS, we're going to have to show that you're inaccurate.
So if it's inaccurate, then you have to get forestry.
You have to hire the forester.
So
and that's the nature of the beast anymore.
Okay, Jack?
Yeah, still the theory, I'd like to talk to the drafting here, because I think we've got a conflict. As I understand, page 4, we're talking about revising the paragraph seeking to goal 2 policy. Item 1, and then the underlying material, bold, italics, that's new language, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That says that the first thing that we go to is Department of Agriculture and NRCS, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. You then go through the language about the IRRs. Mm-hmm. Then we have new language where you can't calculate the IRR, then you use the NRCS. You're going to start with NRCS or you're going to start with IRR, but you can't start with both.
Yeah, you're right.
I think he meant CIR, composite internal rate of return.
CIR is what he's got written there, that's correct.
Right, but in the underlying statement it doesn't say, it just says the IRR. But if, like, for example, if a parcel has 3 or 4 different soils, all most of which have IRR ratings, then you can average it out to the CIRR. So if you just correct that and says composite internal rate of return, then you could use the NRCS. That would make sense.
That's contrary to what he said in the opening.
Yeah. Right. I think he said
if we just drop the second NRCS. Okay, where there's not data available to calculate the internal rate of return, other sources such as Department of Revenue, U.S. Forest Service, or direct management can be used, and we eliminate the computer. Which gives us, you start with NRCS,
I think you should
go to IRR.
I think he and I can work on it together and get it ironed out.
Yeah, because it's the language issue more than anything. Mm-hmm. I think we understand the issues, but the language on paper here could throw everything off.
Okay, so
I think I agree.
So Jack and Bob work on some language on that.
Are we going to have another meeting?
That's
where we're headed right now. I mean, we'd have one more meeting. That's it. We actually officially terminated on the 17th of February.
Oh.
Well, we could email it out and have a consensus back to.
Yeah, if you can.
Through the email, or do we have to put everything together? I mean, I love you all, guys, all, but really.
I'm not a real fan of doing that voting on our email, but
if we limit it to just this.
Yeah.
And Bob's already explained it, so we understand. Just look at the language. And have email it to us so we have time to study it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe on it.
Okay. So you two work on that language on that. And that.
So we need it to
study. Well, unless somebody wants to make a motion to adopt this as amended as we sit.
Yeah.
And I'll do that.
Well, we still have.
I make the motion that we adopt the proposal with the amendment dealing NCRS in the second collection of...
I would prefer to have the language written.
You already heard her before.
We had agreed that she had some other issues with some of the other language here.
Yeah, I like
one,
that.
One, two, three,
like
four on page five. So,
I mean, my brain doesn't work that fast.
So we've got a few more. We've got 40 minutes. So if we want to work through the other three, four items here of where you had some issues with that need to be clarified.
Yeah, because I think it starts off with that one on the top one about the scare.
Yeah.
And then the original text is not there. So I'm not real sure how it's adding up totally.
Oh, on goal 10 policies?
Yeah.
Okay, that 1A1F.
Yeah.
Parcels which have an average annual production capability of 85.0, that is the areas that are defined as forest commercial. Because in goal 10, currently it has forest commercial 4.0 or above. Woodlot is 3.5.
Okay, then again, it's a contradiction. If we're going to use either or, you know, the CIRR, the IRR system, is that language going to be included in that then? And then if that doesn't exist, then we go to the NRCS 50 cubic feet per acre per year commercial. What are we going to zone as woodlot? 25 to 50? What do we have?
No, woodlot is 50 to 80.
Okay, just that clarification, you know.
But that's already
been. Huh? Well, the IRR system, if you're going to retain it, but in this other language, you just don't mention it. It's not in there.
Well,
then it can be technically declared unusable. See what I mean?
These were added, so it still leaves the 4.0 in there.
Okay, but that's the part I'm not seeing.
Yeah, you're not seeing it. So
yeah, you have some part that isn't added, and then I see the part that's added.
And the section E speaks to the IRR of 3.50.
IRR of less than 3.50 or production data.
So your issue is that it just isn't showing the full text.
Because it's not showing the full text, I'm not quite sure
what it says.
What it says.
And I don't know that I brought the full text of the goals and policies. I've got the code, but not the goals and policies.
So if you're comfortable with this, if the language is.
That
you're familiar
with? I
would
be comfortable with it if I knew that it kind of fell into place.
So what makes this uncomfortable to you?
She wants to see what it's being amended.
I'm not sure where it's going because I don't know what it comes before it.
Yeah. She wants to see the context.
So all he's got is what he's added, and I'm not sure if it is consistent with what he's got above.
With the other.
And it may very well be, but I don't see it, so I'm not ready to accept it.
Okay. So let's move to the next then.
I think the same thing there is probably.
So is there some language that needs to be added to this for clarifying?
I don't think so on E in that one, but I'll have to look at context.
Also, DLCD has to, what's the term for it, acknowledge these changes, right?
Well, that's not our concern. Our concern is that we're just taking this to the board, and then the board has to take this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is only step one. And it goes to the board. The board sends it to the planning commission. So this whole thing is all going to culminate with the board making a decision, and then, again, it's going to go to LCDC or DLCD. So it's just our, what we feel ought to be the change. Doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to be the end result. This is not final. I mean, if any example of how we went through the planning commission workshop, I mean, there are probably going to be some changes after you get into the public hearing side of it. Again, just depends on what the public or the planning commission.
We don't care whether it has a chance of
succeeding. Oh, sure we do. Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
We care, but I mean, we want to.
We believe if we sent this on as it is right now, we would believe that this kind of language is appropriate to assist in making the planning process clearing up more clear, and hopefully being able to define a process that will make it easier or acceptable for the applicant as he moves through the system. That's my impression of what we were trying to get to.
Okay.
So that's my
intent. Is making it as clear and concise as possible before the planning commission. So that was the roads thing when we talked about it, and the deer thing too. It's like people are going, hey, we're not here.
So could Jack and Bob write up and include the original language?
At the bottom of the
page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that. Point of order. Do we have to have unanimity of opinion to adopt one of these things? Well, then let's put this to a vote.
Well, I'm honoring the request that she had to go through this. Okay. We've done that. So if there's going to be a motion, then we can make a motion, and we'll go from there.
Earlier, I attempted to move to adopt this with the amendment proposed.
With the, is that with, when you say that?
The deletion of the second NRCS in the final language in paragraph one.
Or shown inaccurate on page 4 or 6.
In the initial language.
Yeah, I would need to have that in complete writing in order to have it correct.
As amended.
Somebody's going to have to put it in writing for me.
So if we need any other changes or suggestions,
I know exactly what it's going to say.
A motion that incorporates.
It makes no sense to me as to how he made the motion. And what he wants in and what he wants out.
I don't know what they are.
Well, that's the point. We don't know what they might be.
Okay, we need. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Now we need to clarify the motion, Jack. As I understand, you were in your motion, you were including the amended language of after the word of, is not available or shown inaccurate.
Correct.
Okay. That would be added to that.
For the first section of the language.
Okay, and then there was another one that you made a comment on.
On page 5, in the first sentence of the proposed new language, other sources such as strike NRCS.
Okay, so on the second line, eliminate NRCS.
Correct.
Okay. Any other amendments or changes? Discussion? More discussion?
Well, the only discussion, I agree that it's grace, and I understand Jack's frustration wants to move along, but I just feel like the first I really saw of this was Malcolm's comments. I never even saw Dodge until tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of issues, like the last point that Malcolm made in his points about once it's a piece of land.
Where are you talking about? What page?
I don't have Bob's.
No, I'm talking about Malcolm's.
Malcolm's, it would be page 3 or 4. It's right above, or actually switches to Bob's email. Malcolm makes the point that we would be recommending that soils with an IRR of less than 3.5 or an average annual production capability of less than 50 cubic feet be put placed in a rural residential 5-acre or limited development zone. Malcolm, if I understand, it makes the point that there ought to be two options there. That if something was a little higher but still didn't meet our commercial timber standard, that there might be a recommendation to be placed in a 20-acre zone, which is still a hell of a lot better than 80 acres of addition for those lands that are most likely to fall in that category, because they're on the interface between the commercial lands and the residential land. I think that's a valid point, and I'd like to be able to discuss that or examine it a little bit more. So my hesitation why I would not vote for Jack's motion is I just feel like I'm being rushed into this and haven't really had a chance to look at the ramifications. I certainly don't want to see everything that would be moved out of commercial forestry automatically that we're recommending it moves into 5A, RR5. I think that's appropriate.
What is the zoning for, I mean, what's the acreage for
20?
So then why would we need a separate release in an already phased limited development?
When is something defined as limited development? I thought it was
there is
little out of rural residential.
There is one. But didn't you have that kind of guy?
What's the difference between that and woodlot?
Woodlot requires an 80-acre minimum.
A woodlot's 80?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was 20.
Well, it was until the state said all forestry zones have to be 80.
No.
Limited development is not a forestry zone. It's a development zone.
Well, I guess I just want a little clarification there, because that's what I would like to see, is that I think there needs to be a transition where you say, well, this is obviously not going to be managed as a commercial timber property. Perpetua is not going to manage it for rough and ready. It's adjacent to already developed land. The topography or something is not suitable. But on the other hand, it's not appropriate because it is the interface with the commercial lands. The 5-acre zoning is not appropriate. So,
is it 5-acre or limited development on a case-by-case? I don't think there is. Is there such a zone as rural residential 20?
No.
So we have to create a zone? Isn't that hard?
Well, I didn't realize the woodlot had been bumped all the way up to 80.
Well, first it got bumped from 20 if you weren't next to a commercial, 40 if you were, and then I guess went up to 80 after that. started buying land.
Well, forestry was 10, and then when we adopted woodlot resource, if you were adjacent to forest commercial, then it was 40. If you were not adjacent to commercial, then it was 20. But you had an option if you showed it was below 3.5, that you could do two lots between 2 and 10 on a one-time only cut.
I didn't even know you had to show it was below 3.5, so that something automatically has two lots and good lots.
No, you had to show that portion was generally unsuitable below 3.5.
But the whole lot didn't have to be below 3.5.
Right. Okay. Just that part.
I thought you just had to pick the least productive site for those two lots.
No, those had to be below 3.5.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back. The motion is on the floor, is to recommend the changes that have been presented by Mr. Hart on pages 4 and 5 of his report. That's dated October 18th, 2011. It's 106 pages. This is 4 and 5. And this time I'm going to call for roll.
As amended by...
And it has been as amended. So we'll call roll at this time.
Keith?
No.
Malcolm?
I'd like to abstain.
I think it would be appropriate for you to abstain because you're going to be in a position
after. I couldn't abstain. I can't abstain.
Well, you're going to be a decision maker on this.
Okay.
Gray?
No.
Bill?
Aye.
Jack?
Aye.
Margaret?
I guess it's appropriate then for me to abstain also.
That's true.
Gordy?
Well, I'd like to abstain because I'm not against it. I just don't feel appropriate, but I'll vote no because I'm not comfortable.
We're not really against it.
We're not against it. We're just not ready.
I just want to clarify a little bit before I put my
name. Exactly.
Harold?
Yes. So 3-3. Mm-hmm. Motion fails. So the next opportunity is if you wish to have this brought back to another meeting, there could be a motion I would accept a motion to continue this item for further review and discussion and conclusion to our, which would be our last meeting, which would be on February, I wrote down, 16th.
I so move.
And is there a second?
Wait a minute.
Second Monday. February 13th, I'm sorry.
February 13th. Yeah.
So okay, there was a motion by Grace. Who seconded it? Gordon. So, discussion. This would be the only item on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. I think I will get.
Yeah.
Well, you are abstaining anyway, so.
Yeah.
I don't have to abstain about when we're going to have a meeting, do I?
No.
Come on.
No, you can vote on that one. Okay. This time we'll ask for a vote or a roll call vote.
I said you'll have to abstain if you were here anyway. So go ahead and go. It's all right.
Kit?
Yeah.
Malcolm?
We're on continuing this item for discussion and action at the next meeting.
Grace?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
Jack?
I won't abstain.
Can't abstain. That's a lot. You don't have a personal interest. You don't have a personal interest.
Do what? I'm sorry.
President.
But most people don't understand.
Margaret.
You can't abstain unless you have a personal financial.
Gordy.
Yes.
Harold.
Well, Harold, yes. I abstain and I'm not voting because I'm going to be a decision maker, but I don't have any personal financial stake in it. Yeah. So does that mean?
I think that it would be inappropriate for you to vote on it here because you're going to be acting on it in that meeting. Maybe. That's my own. You can challenge it and vote anyway if you want.
Well,
what they do on the planning commission doesn't adopt or reject, it just develops a position from the planning commission to present to the board of commissioners. You guys deciding on this.
Or the final decision of the board.
So I don't see the problem with actually Malcolm or.
Yeah, nobody's going
to
know this.
According to David Wagner, the planning commission makes the final decision, sends it to the board, and the board says yay or nay, but can't change anything. If they want to change something, they have to come back to the planning commission, according to David.
Is this at 6?
I'd have to read it. There's been other decisions that have been different from what I've always understood.
I've never heard of that.
Everybody has a different. Okay, so the decision on this is for a meeting on the 13th for this item to conclude it. And I guess what I'd ask is that we put some language in there that would reflect what Grace was concerned with and Malcolm.
And make sure that we get it in time to
review. Yeah, we'll get it down earlier.
Well, now, just on that note, I do have where I sent it to everybody, so.
I never got the original one.
I sent it out. Let's see. I received it on the 5th of January, so that was the same day I sent it out. Yeah, well, unless you, none of it has come back to me. If the emails are not right, then they come back, so.
See, the only name that shows on here is Jack, myself, Malcolm, and Margaret.
Right, but I didn't print out. I didn't print out my sample.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is the when I first received it.
Okay.
So if you're not receiving it or you don't have something,
what
then you need
the
to.
Email, what did it say?
This from Bob Hart.
It just says draft forest position.
Okay, our next item is has been taken off the agenda. That's number 5. The next item is number 6. That's the update from LDAC for recommendations before the Planning Commission. There was a workshop that was conducted for both the fire and the deer winter range. The Planning Commission has recommended that it move forward for public hearing. I don't think they're going to be at the same time. I didn't hear. And I don't know if they have any dates.
One workshop before Article 76. I'm not sure about the other one. Remember?
I thought they were going to move forward on both of them. They were both actually having it on
the
road. But they haven't set any dates yet as far as the Planning Commission's public hearing. So stay tuned.
I thought it was good business.
Other matters, there is a public forum that's going to happen on this Wednesday at Medford at the Southern Oregon University RCC Higher Education Theater. It's going to be involving a discussion on HB 3615, which is the bill that's going to be presented to the legislature in February, which is the one that would provide the opportunity for 3 counties to come up with a regional definition of forest and agricultural definitions. The panel, as I heard this morning, is consisting of a commissioner from Jackson County, Sal Escobar. Is he on that, Jack?
Yeah.
And will be as a panel member. And then from Josephine County, I will be sitting as the chair of this committee in place of Simon Hare, who can't be there because it's at the same time as the commissioners have their public meeting. And who was the other person? Wally Hicks, I think, is also going to be sitting. Sal Escobar is actually the person that's going to be carrying the bill forward, as I understand it. So there will be a good discussion. It's put on by Freedom Works, and I'm not sure who else. Jim Frick will be moderator. They're trying to get somebody from Douglas County to also participate to try to get a feel for what's the impacts today on the regulation and how does it impact counties and
what,
huh? It's at 6 o'clock, 6:30.
6:30 to 8:30,
I believe it is, or 6:30 to 8:00. It's on 101 South Bartlett Street, which is right there where the campus is. It's far in there, so. Room 132 or
133.
Yeah. And I think that would be well worth somebody.
What room was
it? It's in the room 138 or 132.
132.
Okay.
101 South Bartlett Street.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's Wednesday, this Wednesday. So it'll be the 11th.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, he has to be at a meeting up north, but I think he presented something in writing. I don't understand what his role was in that issue, but so anyway, I think it's going to be well worth it. It's something that it will or could impact Richland County down the road. Any other matters? Anybody from the commission have any other matters?
Oh, I have one.
Yeah.
A comment. There's a little bit of an issue with part of the Senate, Article 76. Remember when we made the recommendations, they suggested we might want to address erosion on roads and whatnot on clearing soil. So I've been bouncing ideas off Chuck. I don't think we need to necessarily deal with it. The bigger one is, we wrote it to where we would basically carry the standards that Senate Bill 360 has, which are much more liberal than the ones that are Article 76, which I'm still comfortable with. But part of the idea was to make it easier on planning, because planning was for the Roger Arata. Planning didn't like it, but people told me, why the hell are you trying to make me do this when Senate Bill 360 only makes you do this? But this third point, Dave Wagner, was the forestry saying, well, they're going to change the standards in a couple of years. I said, well, let's just base it on, say, let it be whatever 360 standards are, then we don't even have to spell it out. So we can't do that. We've got to spell it out. So I don't know if we ought to just say, let's just don't have any standards, and let Senate Bill 360 cover it. But I don't know if you want to get into that at this point.
I don't think we do. I think that's going to be an issue that's going to have to be dealt with at the Planning Commission level and the Commissioner level, because it's down the road as far as any issues. I mean, I think we fulfilled what our mission was in relationship to that. And so whatever happens at the state level or conflicts there, that's a whole other, I think it's a whole other ballgame.
We only could work with what we have, not what
exactly
might be happening somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
They say next year it might be 10 years.
Yeah. The only other thing that I have is that the meeting that we're scheduled to have, that will be our last meeting. I do have and have prepared a draft letter, but I'll probably change it now. And what I did basically said is to inform the assist to the Board of County Commissioners that we would the term of this committee expires on February 17th of this year. That's per the resolution 2010-008. The resolution does allow for a continuance of the committee. However, since the Board of Commissioners did not provide funding in the 2011-12 budget, and in view of the reduced funding and support from the Planning Office, and I put we as a committee, but this is me writing it, feel it would be in the best interest to not continue with the committee. It is our belief there is much more that could be done to make the planning application process easier and less costly. However, the review should be done using a different approach. I don't define that approach. I will provide a final report of the committee's activities as a committee after the 17th of February. So I do plan to do a final report, which I will get to you folks to be able to look at it to see, or if you feel there should be some additions to that. Right now there are still some recommendations that have been forwarded to the Board of Commissioners, and those committee members who have provided the information have agreed to be available through the public hearing process. So I sort of stepped out on that one. But I'm hoping that as it moves through the public hearing process, that you chair people that participated, Jack, Malcolm, of course he's on the Planning Commission, but that we are going to be available as members, having been part of this, to provide any comments that we need to at the public hearing process. And that was sort of it, other than thanking you folks, and special thanks to Ann Ng for her work as a the secretary, and I do believe that the minutes, I have to tell you, in all my years, these have been the best minutes that I have ever seen. I mean, as far as covering what we have done, the most professional and clear, and I really do, it's very much appreciated.
Thank you.
And I think she's a very dedicated.
Yeah, thank you, Harold. I'm going to make sure that.
Well, I really try to get rid of meetings. I called Meetings Anonymous tonight just to see whether I had to show up or not. But anyway, I'll wait until after we've had that final meeting to actually send the letter out. But I'll get a copy of it out to you, email, so that you can see it. And if you think you want to add any information to that as well. So the only item that I see for next week is this, or not this, what's my week? Next week. I mean, we don't have to wait. We always have a meeting before.
I've offered that quite a few times.
I know. You know, that's another option. You know, you can, nothing says we have to finish up on the schedule that we set out. So, and I have to say, you're one of the only committee where I've seen as much dedication as far as meeting the commitment of time and being here.
Have we actually been here 2 years?
Oh, yeah. Well, our first meeting was 3:10. So it'll be not quite 2 years. And I got to tell you, in all the committees, I mean, to have the attendance has been tremendous. And I think it helps when you have you know what the time is going to be, and you keep the time down to a certain time frame, and you don't let the thing drag out for a couple, three or four, more than 2 hours.
I've got to compliment everybody here that we've gotten so much done in only 2 years. I'm on the Urban Growth Boundary Sphere. I'm up on 5. Supposedly, there's an end in sight.
Well, thank God we're not doing the RPS program over Jackson County. They're working on number 11. I just heard, I was at a meeting, that they don't think it's going to be done for another 2 years.
Oh, Lordy.
In Jackson County.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and they really don't understand the magnitude of what's happening, what's going to happen in that, because that thing is so, it's terrible. They got the.
What's that program?
Huh? It's a regional problem solving. It's supposed to be an expedited process for local governments. They have redefined expedited. And it's one of those where the county has to adopt it, which they've done. But now each city that's agreed to participate also has to approve it in a public meeting. And the property owners that are either going to be in or out of the reserve area, because if you're outside of the reserve area, you're never going to get in. That's 50 years. It's an absolute nightmare. And there's property owners that would like to be in the urban growth boundary now that have made application, and the county's not accepting that, or not, will not proceed with the application, and they've been sitting on it for over 4 or 5 years. And they were going to wait until this RPS was done so that would all be taken care of. But unfortunately, they didn't realize the magnitude of what they're dealing with. And they haven't even got to the point of real true citizen counties yet.
Oh, will two counties get together if that ever happens?
I don't think it will. Anyway,
well,
we can stay for another 10 minutes if you like. You guys got started late, but we're adjourned. Thank you.